Imagine an early livestock guardian dog laying out under the stars thousands of years ago next to a band of sheep and goats somewhere in what is now Turkey. He sniffs the air and peers into the moonlit night, searching for threats as his shepherd snores, and he thinks, if only this bozo had Zoom and Cindy Benson, we might just understand each other. Welcome to Farm Dog. This is Farm Dog, the podcast about the working dogs of farming, ranching, homesteading, and rural living. Farm Dog is presented by Goats on the Go, a national network of independent business owners who provide sustainable weed and brush control for their customers using goats. Want to put goats to work on your vegetation problem? Interested in launching your own goat grazing business? The place to start is goatsonthego.com. Welcome to Farm Dog. I'm your host, Aaron Steele, and I am pleased to be joined today by Cindy Benson. You may remember Cindy if you go back and listen to episode 55, which I'd highly recommend you do. Cindy joined us before several months ago, and she is back. She's with Benson Ranch or Benson Maremmas in Gold Hill, Oregon. She gave us an excellent description of how indeed livestock guardian dogs can and should be trained, as many people tend to buy the idea that livestock guardian dogs just get put out there with the livestock and they just do their thing naturally. So Cindy has a really interesting perspective. I'm glad to have her back. Cindy, just tell us a little bit about your background again for those who haven't listened to episode 55 yet, where you're located, how you got into dogs in the first place, that sort of thing.
All right. I am in Gold Hill, Oregon. I am a rancher. I got started with livestock guardian dogs like a lot of people do, which is that I need them. I had animals that were being eaten. And the surprise to me in all this is how much I fell in love with them and how it motivated me to take a different path in my life than I expected. I ended up with, in the last 10 years, I have owned or done training with over 300 livestock guardian dogs of a variety of breeds. I raised 100 pups here on the ranch. I took off in an effort to understand my own dogs better and now have accomplished a $20,000 behavioral science education. So my life history with livestock and ranching and what's practical and necessary, my experience with that many dogs, this ranch has been a LGD training college for all of this time. And then to be able to go out into the behavioral science world and learn the laws of behavioral science and then how they apply back to guardian dogs. And almost none of the coursework that I have done had anything to do with dog training and certainly not anything to do with LGDs. It had to darn with how animals learn. And some of the most valuable coursework that I've ever done had to do with training animals in zoos and marine situations where you can't put a choke collar on, you can't put a leash on, they don't care if you're angry, they don't care what you think, they only care what you do. And if you work with an animal and what you do is based on what they do and then what you do, you can get where you want to go in a very concise manner that makes sense. So when I went out and learned the laws of behavioral science, and I'd come home and I'd practice on my dogs and I'd go walk out in the field and say, okay, I learned this, how do you feel about it? And I was looking for things that would make their lives better and my lives better. And so if it fit like that for an LGD, I kept it. If it didn't, I threw it out and I went and I learned more and learned more. And so what I've done at this point is to be able to take both camps, you know, livestock guardian dogs and how people need to use them and what I've learned about behavior and narrow it down into what kinds of skills are valuable for an LGD to learn from people, what they need to learn from livestock, what they need to know at certain periods of their life. I've learned a lot about how to teach this to people because it's one thing to be able to train dogs. It's another bit to be able to verbalize it in a way that allows other people to learn how to teach their own dogs. And that is a major soapbox of mine. Paying it forward, I don't think people get to be on this earth and just breathe the air. There's an obligation to give back. And I stumbled into something that just thrills me and is dynamic and that I'm good at. And so now I'm a full-time trainer. I have training clients all across the country. I've published one book and there's more in the works. And the online courses that were published Christmas Eve, 2023, are a really concise way to for me to teach well to lots of people and connect with lots of people. So I love my life. I love where it went, and it did that because a mountain lion ate a mini donkey. Who knew?
Well, I feel bad for the mini donkey, but I'm glad that it's led to something super positive. So I want to talk a ton about your new online courses. But before we dive into that, you mentioned something interesting that a big part of your learning has been teaching people how to teach their dogs. And I wonder if you could just spend a little time telling us some of the lessons you've learned about how people respond to your coaching and how you've learned best to communicate with people. And what have some of the initial obstacles been?
Facebook, social media. It's so dangerous. So, livestock guardians are different than companion dogs for a whole bunch of reasons. And one is that a person that's living with them has so much less control, and you can perceive that you have control, and an LGD will tell you that you're just wrong. Companion dogs really care about what people think. They know that their survival is centered around a person, so they will. They'll do repetitions of behavior. They'll keep eating treats endlessly. You know, you can get away with being kind of a lesser skilled trainer of dogs, and a companion dog will still follow you devotedly and endlessly. It's unsettling to people to have an LGD whose primary work is at night, and they don't really care what people think necessarily, unless you use a language that appeals to them. So, not being in control for an owner with a dynamic situation of a predator animal, the dog, and a prey animal, the livestock, is very unsettling. And so they really want to know how to take control of that situation, how to be sure that everything goes well. And the popular methodology for that is you get out a bigger stick. You know, you use a shock collar, you correct a dog, you do all these things that actually push an LGD away from any kind of partnership with people. So part of my task is to let people know what the shortest path to success is and how that actually does give them some control and some influence over things. And one of the first things I try to do with people when I work with them is empower them. Usually people reach out to me in my training client business because they have a problem, because something scares them or feels threatening or feels, you know, there's a mystery there that they need to solve, and there's some stress about that. And I can usually work with people and figure out where their strengths are, because everybody comes into it with strengths, with learned history that serves them, and pick out the pieces that really dovetail in to what will be valuable for them with their LGD in a triage situation. Like right now, today, let's make it better. Let's show you what strengths you have and give you three or four things to work on to settle things down, and then we go forward. And with LGDs, most of what is effective training is changes in environment. So if I can have them tell me how big the acreage is, what the fences are like, what the kind of livestock they're living with, how old's the dog, how close, you know, all those things, I can usually pick up a piece that'll create more harmony than what they're aware of, or tools that they have that they don't know are tools. And so very quickly we get on a path where the dogs kind of relax and feel better. The people feel a little hope. I feel good about life. And that's usually the beginning step.
Very good. So as you're talking there, and I have the benefit of having just watched a little bit of your first modules of your online training course, you mentioned companion animals. You spend some time in your course talking about the differences between how a brain is wired in a companion animal and how it is with a livestock guardian dog. Is it accurate that a border collie or a stock dog falls into the category of a companion animal, even if it's used as a serious working dog on a farm or ranch?
Well, let's tease that out a little bit. Livestock guardian dog is a nurturer. They manage real estate. They care about where their feet are. They care about what's in their world. Every other kind of breed of dog cares about something else. They care about people more. They care about prey drive. They care about chasing a ball. They have specialized genetic footprint. That does not diminish how important they are. I mean, companion dogs are companion dogs, but they're also incredibly working dogs. There's lots of, I mean, the military, the police, you and your border collies, those are very valuable, very important dogs. So it's saying it's a pet dog seems like a little bit dismissive, I think. I haven't figured out a great way to say it. But the biggest difference is what motivates those two camps of dogs. And so in an effort to do behavior modification and figure out how to make the day of a border collie versus an LGD, you're pulling out a very different toolbox. So they're on equal footing, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of importance in this world, and they're valuable, and they have. It's just that if you're trying to teach an animal something, you first have to know what the animal cares about. And then if you know what they care about and you give them more of that and less of what they don't like, you start getting a dog that's interested in having you show up and goes off as a partner with you. And what you're going to give a Labrador or a Springer Spaniel or a Border Collie is just a completely different thing. So they're dogs, but you got to throw one language, you got to throw one set of reinforcers just out of the way and look at these others. And it's not obvious to people. And that's one of the dangers in social media is if you ask people what an LGD is, everyone has a different answer. And it often has to do with what they need from the dog, what actually is genetically in place that makes these dogs different. And that's the science of Ray Coppinger that I use in the free course, gives you a baseline that is truth. It's fact, if you want to accept scientific research as fact. So you get away from lore and you get away from people's opinions and you just take it back down to chemistry, which is what all of this is. It's our bodies and our hormones and whatnot. And that gives you a commonality. So then you can start getting out of your way about guilt, shame, shoulds, whatever, and look at what's true. And if you start there, then you have some hope of being an effective partner with the dog and an effective trainer with the dog. And if you're in lockstep together, meeting your needs and their needs, and there it's the same, it's easy. I think raising LGDs is incredibly easy. I think every companion dog I've ever lived with was more complicated to live with than LGDs are, I think. Border collies are brilliant, but they are on speed dial. I mean, by the time you think about something to do with them, they're 10 steps down the road. An LGD is a slow, mindful animal, so I can afford to not be super great with my timing, and I still get where I'm going. They're still on the same plate I am. Border collies are like gone. And I have border collies, and I love them dearly, but I think they're more challenging for most people to live with.
Interesting. Well, so, it would be pretty common, of course, for a farmer or rancher to have both stock dogs, border collies, whatever, and livestock guardian dogs. Have you come across in your training somebody who's can be really good with stock dogs, who still hasn't grasped livestock guardian dogs because they haven't put their mind around that science?
I've never worked with anyone. Well, let's see. Let's say that differently. So people reach out to me because I'm geeky. On the website, it's very clear that I'm opinionated, that I'm teaching from a certain perspective. So I think people that want to continue to use shock collars just wave me off and go somewhere else. So I don't know how many people are put off by the way that I train. I have first time training sessions with people. If they don't go to a second time, maybe they've decided that what I'm doing is hooey. So if you had a border collie person that had one meeting with me and I never heard from them again, maybe they didn't understand it or didn't want to embrace it or whatever. My way is not my way or the highway. But anybody that stays with me just a little bit, I'm good at teaching them. I'm good at coming alongside what their learned history is and building a bridge to understanding these dogs, especially if it gets out of the way of telling them when they're wrong, telling them that they should, tell them that they made a mistake. That's not productive. Showing them where the commonality is, and if you shift it just a little bit, this will really take off with your LGDs. It's a little different than the border collies. it's all, I mean, positive reinforcement works with people too. It's about finding what's good and building on it. So when I work with clients, that's my position on it. So I don't come into it and tell them that they're nuts for what they're doing. I honor them and say, this is what you see, this is what I see. Maybe somewhere in the middle, this is possible. And I feel like I've been very successful at that. I mean, I kind of have a devoted following, and that's not because people think I'm great. It's because they've been able to improve their situation with their dogs, which was my point in the first place. So people that have a long history of, by God, being right, you will do this, you will obey, are not going to do well with LGDs. And those are the situations where LGDs pay with their lives. So there are people that are tough sells. And I don't try to change the whole world. If I have access to someone and they're listening, I do my best for however long they're listening to do my best for them and their dogs.
Yep. This is going to take us on a bit of a tangent, but I kind of like this idea that there are people out there. I do not include myself among them, but there are people out there who are just dog naturals. And without ever reading Ray Coppinger's work, they can work with a border collie in the morning and understand that border collie in kind of a horse whisperer kind of way. And they can work with a livestock guarding dog in the afternoon. And though they would not quote a scientific reason why they did it differently, they just instinctually understood that they had to do it differently with this dog than the one they were working with in the morning. Is that all fantasy, or do you
No,
think that
it's
there are
not.
people out there like that?
No, so let me give you my spin on that. First of all,
We'll get back to Cindy in just a moment, but first, a couple of quick announcements. First of all, I want to tell you that Goats on the Go, which is my company and the presenting sponsor of this podcast, is in a busy time of year right now. We are about to wrap up recruiting for new people who want to start a goat grazing business for weed and brush control on customers' properties right where they live. Our program is designed to help those people get quickly up and started. Give them all the information and training they need to be successful and to partner with them and support them along the way so that they are not going out into the world cold starting their goat grazing business. I started Goats on the Go with a partner here in Central Iowa back in 2012, and since then we have grown to a national network of about 65 affiliates all across the country from California to the East Coast. And we would love to have you be a part of it. If you are wondering how to put your goats and oftentimes also your sheep to work, earning more money for you, we would love to talk with you. So feel free to reach out to us at info@goatsonthego.com and just ask me a direct question or three. Or go to goatsonthego.com and read all about how to own a goat grazing business and get started with our help. Secondly, I would invite you to visit farmdogpodcast.com. That is the website that accompanies this show. And at that site, we have a place where you can send us some comments or questions or recommendations about future episodes of this podcast. You can also click the shop button at the top of that page, and you'll be taken to a place where you can buy branded merchandise from, again, Goats on the Go, our presenting sponsor, or keep scrolling down to the bottom of that store, and you will find all sorts of farm dog merchandise as well. We don't do a lot of advertising on this podcast, so if you like what we're doing and you'd like to support us in some way, order some merchandise from that store and show the world that you like Farm Dog. We would very much appreciate it.
It's nice to think that people are natural animal people, but babies weren't born animal people. People are born with an inquiring mind, people that are good observers and are willing to be creative and adaptive to what they see. Those are the people that become real animal whisperers, because you're not born knowing what animal body language means or the context or how to use it. But if you're watching animals and you care about it, if relationships care, social skills care, you care about social skills, which is what it is in dealing with animals, then you're just an open book. You're a sponge, and you're learning all that from the time you're a teeny tiny kid, and you're learning it from people as well. And if it's something that excites you and resonates with you, then you can become someone that looks really, really gifted. But a lot of that is learned. People have an aptitude for it, but nobody's born knowing it. And so if you are a person that you don't feel like you have an aptitude for it, but you need to have some because you've got a dog in front of you now, you can learn it on purpose differently than what those people do, that they just suck it out of the universe. You know, I mean, everything I've ever done that I cared about had to do with a four-legged or two-legged, animal somewhere. So I've spent just a ton of time caring about that and observing it and making changes and seeing how that went. And so at this point in my life, I have a lot of that. If I were a person that hadn't been exposed to that opportunity, I still have the potential of being that. I just haven't had the exposure. So, and some of those people that, like you had a border collie guy that I asked you about on your podcast. Some of what he said was just brilliant. I would love to meet that man. Like talking about horses having horse sense, and people don't give that to dogs, that dogs have dog sense. That has to do with what he learned and what his sharp mind has processed and put back out to us in a way that's really valuable. The way that he phrases that and the way that he teaches that, he wasn't born with it. He was born with valuing the social skills and the relationship. But he went like I did. He went down this path and he invested a whole ton, and now he's giving it back, and it's beautiful. So if you don't, when I talk with people and they say they're not good with dogs, I ask them, what did that look like? What was the dog? What was the circumstance? And then we talk about what my view of what the dog was doing was, and then we talk about what might have happened differently, and then they go forth. And so those things can change. Some people are really easy to work with because they've spent a whole life in paying attention to what animals do and they care about it. Some people are starting at a different place, but everybody has the potential to learn this stuff. I did. I mean, I'm walking proof. I don't consider myself super intelligent. I didn't head off to do this. I don't have a college degree. I just really, really, really care about the quality of life of my animals and my partnership with them. And so it took me down this path. And I happened to have a lot of money at the time and could go and do the science behind it, which means that I don't have to guess as much. Behavioral science laws are true of brains. So if I know those, and then I go look at what an LGD cares about and I bring the two together, that's powerful. And that's taken me a lot farther than it would have to just live with dogs and trial and error things and not really truly know why things worked or they didn't.
Well, there you go, farm dog audience, your daily dose of affirmation. If you are not, don't consider yourself a dog person, there is hope for you. It is a learned skill. I am not one of those people. Like, here I am hosting a podcast called Farm Dog, and I do not consider myself to like have this magic connection with dogs. Part of the frustration from that is what drives me to get better at it and to seek out the advice of experts like you. But I think it's encouraging to hear that, there are people like that, but not the vast majority of us are not, and yet we can still learn from the information and the experts that are out there and get better at it.
So here's a thought for you. The people that I enjoy working with the most, usually, especially when I was selling puppies, are people that tell me they know nothing because it's not uphill. They're hungry for understanding because they know that they assume that they don't know anything. They actually know more than they think they do. It's much harder to work with. Like, I never was willing to sell my Maremma pups to a 30-year-old or 30-year LGD person, because it's very hard for them to change that. And if you don't keep up with behavioral science, which changes all the time, our understanding of it, you're using a toolbox that's really, really old, and it hasn't kept up with what's been learned over the years with behavioral science. With someone that is stepping in and hungry to learn and a sponge about it, I don't have to work against all that earlier stuff. So you are a really fun person to work with. You have a big inquiring mind. You're very motivated. You love your dogs. You reach out to people in these podcasts and you do a lot of good. So you have a really big potential. somebody that's entrenched into 30 years, I've always done it this way, or tradition says, they've got a ceiling, you know, and that's not going to be as easy for their dogs as someone like you.
It's a great jumping off point to start talking about your online courses because now you do not have to have physical access to Cindy to access some of her expertise because of the online workshops, the online courses you've begun to offer. I'm wondering what was the problem, like the overarching problem you sought to solve by offering the online courses specifically. I got a hunch of what you would say about your overall training program there in Gold Hill, Oregon, but specifically with the online training courses, what's the problem that you wanted to fix?
Well, so what I'm good at is dogs. What I'm not great at is marketing. And I've gotten better at teaching, using the right words, connecting with people. But then it comes down to how do I get what's in my head out there for somebody else to use? Because otherwise, everything I can do here with dogs stops with me. And I'm a writer. And initially, I just sit at the computer and tell white dog stories. That's what I, how I thought of it. I would just talk about things they taught me. And then I do videos and whatnot. Then there ended up being 200 blog posts on the website. How do you go on a blog library and say, dog is doing X, let's find an answer? It's not organized that way as much as I've tried. So then I wrote a book, and Amazon's really helpful with that. And that's going out there, and that's helpful. But it's how to translate how what an LGD needs from somebody else's course. And the other thing about a book is in social publishing or in self-publishing, I can revise it all the time, but I can't get the written ones back. You know, that's out there. And my education, my view on things changes still on speed dial. As much as I know today, my fantasy is to you just to know this much more in a year. You know, so how do you get the books back? So, and how do you, and I can talk faster than I can type. So how do I put something out there that people can easily find, that they can use when they have the time, that they can refer back to? And Zoom training is wonderful. LGD training on Zoom makes really, really good sense because most of it has to do with the physical situation that the dog has. And if I were to walk on somebody's property and work with their LGD, that LGD is a completely different animal if I'm standing there because I just changed his world. So I change things. So it works better for me to have people send me videos or be on FaceTime and watch a dog and have me be able to translate for them what I see in the dog's body language. I learn about where their fences are, where their barns are, suggest changes in the logistical situation. And then we work together about the dog. So it's actually really, really helpful, more so than I think it would be for companion dog training, which I've also been a student of. The online course can be dynamic. I can change it on a whim. When people give me feedback about those slides, I go in there and I whip them out of there, or I add audio and I do a better job of explaining things. I have people in other countries, people in Australia, English as a second language people taking that course. So I need to be careful about how I say it. The PDFs, there's 300 slides in that course, 64 PDFs, and 2.5 hours of video. So you can't do that with a book. The video parts, 200, 2.5 hours of video, and I think the longest video, most of the videos are less than 3 minutes. So anything that I teach in there, I pull out a video and I show it. So I'm proving it. It's like you can argue with it if you want to, and even if, and I get a little defensive, like I assume people are going to argue. But let's put it differently. If you want to understand it, and you're looking at me with a dog, and you're watching the dog, and you're watching me, and then I can do a voiceover and talk about what I think happened. It's not theory anymore, and it's not dry. It's not in a book. It's you're standing right next to me, and you're experiencing it with me. So that's a really valuable way to teach. So all the skills that I say that I think LGDs should learn from people, be taught by people, there's video showing every single step of that that I'm teaching. The other thing that is really exciting to me about it is when I do private Zoom sessions with people, I charge $75 an hour. I'm worth that and more. That's fine. But whatever brilliant work that we do only stays with us. And that's not a large enough, it's not a big enough effect for me. So what I did with the online course is create a live Zoom aspect of it. So up to as much as a weekly, situation. There's live Zoom sessions. So when people are a student, they can ask me questions on those Zoom sessions, and I'll answer them. Graduates of the course can stay and have access to that for a year. That all goes in a library that everybody can look at. So I have kind of like private training sessions with however many people want to attend, and then it goes into a video library that's part of the course that everybody can look at forwards and backwards. And my goal with that course is to create a learning community, to create a situation where people stay involved. When I work with dogs and when I work with people, I learn at least as much as I teach. And so talking with lots of people improves my skills, shows me more about what people care about, what kinds of things people are running into, where they find it, how I can help. So the course is really dynamic. Right now, the first person signed up for the course on the 9th. So we're just over a month. There are 16 paid students in that course. We've had one Zoom session. We're going to have another this Friday. I get to work with 16 people, 16 people that have chosen to have inquiring minds and want to learn things. And I'm all about that. So instead of trying to convince somebody of something, they have told me they want to be there. They've told me that they see me as an expert. I don't like to play that card all that well, like in blog posts, and I don't see myself from that lofty height. But in a course, I'm expected to be the instructor. So I take hold and I answer questions and we find out together. And I have a huge video library. So I can go backwards, pull out videos, and do a voiceover and say, that situation happened with me with a similar dog. Here's a video. Here's what I saw. Here's what we did. This is how it turned out. That kind of teaching is just tremendous. And I get to do that in this course.
That's amazing. So with those recorded Zoom sessions, the value of being a member or being a graduate for that year, actually the value keeps increasing over time because there's more and more content being added.
That's my goal.
Yeah, that's really cool. Another th interesting thing, and I'd like to just kind of go back and reemphasize this point you made about those Zoom sessions. Your presence on site, if you were doing that in person, actually impacts the behavior of the dog. And that's something that it never occurred to me until you said it. And I wonder if you could just expand on that a little bit, maybe give us an example or two that of how you being there to help with the training physically would actually change the dynamic of the situation.
Well, okay. Here's how I see it. Anytime you're working with a livestock guardian dog, you only have 50% of their brain because 50% of it is always working 24/7. There's no off switch. So anytime I add anything, a request from the dog or any interaction with the dog, I'm adding to the complexity of that dog's job. So if I go to somebody's property, I just became part of what they have to manage. So they had their manager job before. Now it's more difficult because I'm there. So they have to manage me while they're trying to learn from me. That's really hard. So, and they know I'm a stranger. I'm novel there. They don't know that they trust me. They still, even if they trust me and they like me, they still have to be conscious of this novel situation. And for an LGD, that's a major focus. That's why they guard. They're looking for novel situations. If I can be invisible, and I can see what the dog is doing in his circumstance naturally, in a day-to-day fabric of things. And I can weigh in with the owner about what I see, what I might change if I saw that here on my ranch. And then we put in a plan. We try a couple of things and then we check back and see what the dog said about whether it was valuable or not. That's a truer sense of that dog than if I walk onto the property and change things and then train based on the changed behavior of the dog. I can't know what he was doing before I got there. It all may go out the window. So it really matters with LGDs differently than companion dogs. And companion dogs, like if you're doing marker training like I do, or clicker training, if you want to call it that, you're border collies. Because they're so fast, your timing really has to be right, or they're connecting the marker with something they did six times down from what you actually wanted to mark, right? With an LGD, that's not true. So my observations and people being less skilled about that have a really high likelihood of success. Because the dog learns differently, learns more slowly. The things that are most reinforcing to an LGD are things that are inherent on the property. You cannot endlessly bribe an LGD. I could wave steak in front of a dog of mine. If I was next to a gate and I opened the gate, they're going to run over the top of the steak and they're going to go do a perimeter check on the property because that's more reinforcing to them. So learning how to use what's inherently there in a property to make the dog's life better and increase the likelihood that he's going to do certain things is really valuable. Pet trainers use a lot of food reinforcement or a lot of redirecting the dog back to themselves and instruct the dog, cued the dog, cued behaviors. I want LGDs to leave. I want them to go out and go to work. And if I change the setup, they'll work differently, but they'll leave me and they'll go to work. And that's valuable for them. So that's it's an easy thing to teach people, but you won't see that in any books. You know, dog training is all about making the dog do what you said. Well, if you've got an LGD and you want him to handle everything at 4 a.m., that's not helpful. And they don't see their world that way anyway. It's like, yeah, maybe, but I got a job, so I'm going to go out there.
So we tend to think of anything remote and not in person as being a barely acceptable substitute for being there in person. So you just gave us some good reasons why, for LGD specifically, a remote setup is actually pretty beneficial. But what have you learned so far are the limitations of remote with these kind of on-demand courses? Is there anything that you've come across when you're like, oh, I wish I was there right now so I could like show you how to position your body in this way or that way?
There's some of that. The biggest limitation is in people describing to me what their dog is doing. What I see a dog doing is very different from what most people see a dog doing. Like, and they'll use labels like he's aggressive to this sheep, or he wants to fight with other dogs, or he's re reactive, or whatever. Those labels don't serve anybody. If I can get them to hold up a video camera, you can hold up a cell phone any time of the day, right? And just point it at a dog and then send me the video. And I can say, okay, from 30 feet away with this kind of noise over here, this dog targets that particular sheep. So if the sheep is farther away, or if you don't do it at that time of day, does the dog still target the sheep? So problem solving like that works really well if I can see it, and less well if I have it described to me. So without the advantage of videos, remote training would be very hampered. I really need to be able to see it and then spin it from my point of view back to the owner so that they're seeing. A lot of my job is to help people see the world through the eyes of an LGD. And if I can create that kind of clarity for people, then what they interpret, what they see when they're looking at something, and what they tell me they see starts to line up better. And that gives them better information to make training decisions. So without video, it wouldn't work.
Fantastic segue, because I wanted to point something out. I admittedly, for the audience out there, have only watched a little bit of just the free portion of Cindy's course. And I immediately saw the value of Cindy, you just running a video on a couple of puppies and describing what is happening. It was on the topic was the
Atlas.
signaling behaviors from the dogs.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, that was in the free portion and I watched a few minutes of it. I would pay you $200 for a year just to have you walk around your farm videoing things and telling me what you see, because that's, I think, what one of my biggest weaknesses with dogs is recognizing what these subtle little gestures from dogs mean in response to certain things. So that's
So
just in
did
the free portion of your
you
course.
see how much fun you are? You know how I bore people when I go out there and I just say, just look at that. I moved just a little bit and he moved this way and look at this. And oh, it just blows my skirt up to talk about that stuff. And part of what's been fun about the course is that's what people want. That's why they're there. And so I could pull out, God, I could do this for years, pull out videos of anything I've done here in any situation when I'm doing training. There's something I think I'm doing, but there's things the dogs think they're doing. And so if I go back and I play those, especially the old ones, I turn off the volume because I'm saying things that I just would never say now. And I just watch the dogs and watch the changes. I mean, that is so valuable. And learning what those behaviors mean, there's no shortcut. You either have to have somebody translating a whole lot of it or watch a whole lot of it yourself. You're not born knowing that stuff. And it's like looking at an onion and peeling back layers. The better you get at understanding those subtleties, the faster you can step in and make a change or support the dog or stop doing what you're doing that's causing the dog to look like he is. I have such fun with that. And so with the course, I get to just do a ton of it. I can put it in the video library, and if people are bored, they don't have to look at it, right?
Right. I have a fantastic product idea for you. Now, it's going to have to be expensive. Okay, so farm dog audience, it's going to be expensive, but this would be super valuable. You instruct a client to set up a live streaming camera on their property, and you tune in and just watch remotely for, some predefined amount of time at predefined times of day, when that dog might be having particular challenges, and just report back on what you see. So you're not there changing the environment with your presence, but you get like a live feedback almost on what's happening with your livestock guardian dogs from an expert. What do you think?
I'm way ahead of you, and
Yeah.
it's not expensive at all. The videoing that I've done here up to this point has required somebody managing the video camera or me holding up a phone, because technology has changed now. I recently bought, my version of a Ring camera, which means I can set it up out there, I can focus it, I can zoom in or whatever, and it's just out there, and I can train and I can do stuff. And I have, in the last 10 years, I've had mostly 30 to 40 Maremmas here at any given time. There's 15 here right now. My own sugar high is working with adolescent LGDs, which people tend to avoid like the plague. I love it because it's so dynamic, and I have three of them here right now. So if I just go and do stuff in front of the camera, or if I point it at a population of dogs and livestock and I just let it run, and then I go back here on the ranch, I don't need anybody else to do it. Even although I would definitely accept videos of anybody's anything, and then just talk about it. That's the value of the LGD college here on the ranch. It's just to be able, like sitting here at my desk, when I look out there, I can see 10 dogs working, and they're in different pastures with different kinds of livestock. And because I'm a geek, I sit here and I just watch them, and there's such a story to tell that they tell. And as I get better at it, I see more of it. And I understand how to manipulate it differently, if you will, or I learn what I did right. If I'm looking at a dog who's sleeping next to a pile of sheep and nothing's happening, think about that. Nothing's happening. He's not doing anything I want to strangle him for. It's brilliant. It's perfect. And it looks like an accident, but that's success. And I see a lot of that here. And I've learned how to get there and skip a lot of those other steps. And it's just from being an observer and watching the dogs and the science stuff. So you're right. And the very best ways to learn from dogs are when people didn't do it. It's when the dog is doing what he's doing on his own. Because if he's doing it on his own, he's doing it because it's valuable to him. So if you can figure out how to make what you want valuable to a dog, you get more of it. And the only way to know what's valuable to a dog is to see what he chooses on his own. So, like with an adolescent LGD who would just love to run the legs off of anything and everything, they've forgotten everything that they ever knew for that period of time. They're fast, they're irreverent. I can take them into a different environment and run with that. Those dogs learn fast. They can do anything. They think they rule the world. Gone is the puppy thing. They think it's like being a high school jock, right? You're not mortal at all. You can do anything. And so I can put that kind of a dog in a situation where he can be fast and he can go with me and do things, because that's what he showed me that he needs when he's running out there with the sheep that he used to be good with. So take him away from the sheep, put him with something else, change the ask, and take off. And I only know how to do that if I watch what the dog chooses to do on his own. And that's either with me sitting here or going back and looking at videos. And it's very valuable. Video makes a really big difference about being a trainer or an instructor. Most of the videoing that I did here on the ranch wasn't from the lofty height of I'll teach somebody. It was that when I'm in the moment with the dog, I have to be right there, present. When I play the video later, I see all the things I wish I hadn't done. You know, like if I'm clicker training 12 puppies, I will see a puppy sitting behind me, endlessly giving the behavior I'm looking for, hoping that I will see him. You know, and I gotta beg forgiveness, and you'll see them, they'll do that manding, they'll sit and wait for me to give them something. They'll wait and they'll wait and they'll wait, and then they figure out that I'm a flawed human. They get up and they come around in front of me, they do it again, like, did you get this now? And I don't see that in real. So the videos were for me, but they're wonderful to teach with, and I continue to learn from them. I look at like stuff that I was videoing in 2017. As I said, I don't listen to what I said. I look at the dogs based on my level of education now, and I still learn from them.
You're in a position of now marketing a product you created, and you have the best of intentions for it, but I think that you'd probably at least like to make a little money from it too. And I know that marketers would like to say, oh, this is for everyone. I made it for everyone. But of course, if you make it for everyone, you didn't make it for anyone specifically. And so I'm wondering, who did you have in mind as you were developing this course? I mean, there's when I do something creative that I'm going to share with the world, I have kind of a loose prototype in my mind of the person I'm writing to. So I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you, who's your loose prototype? Describe that for us, the person who would benefit most from your courses.
Well, I had a course designer, and she is well educated about how people learn, how to reach an audience, what kind of things should be there. She's Atlas's owner. He was here for training, and she became very enamored of what I was doing, and she said, "You need to stop translating. Of course, you need to write your own, and I'm here to help you do it." So, in working with her, she kept having to tune me up about saying things at too deep a level or saying too much of it. So I felt like I was dumbing it down. I had to simplify it, start at the beginning for people. And my part of my ability to compromise that was that I got to write all those PDFs. So the slides are baseline, pretty much. The PDFs let me run off in a tangent. And the videos, the Zoom videos, allow me to go as deeply as anybody wants. So I have people on there that just need the high points. That's where they are, and that's where they're started. And so the slides will take them there. The PDFs are downloadable. You can keep them. But the Zoom sessions allow me to go where people specifically are. So if I was like a lot of the coursework I did, I'd owned 50, 100, 200 LGDs, and I was still learning. Because behavioral science is just an ever-changing thing. And as you're working with your own dogs, you find that you need some of the things that didn't work with the last dog or whatever. So that course is not going to bore anybody, but it's set up so that it's not over anybody's head. And if people want to go farther, I'm right there with the Zoom sessions. And every slide has a discussion thing. If you click on that, it opens a dialogue box with me. You can get as geeky as you want on every single slide. And I answer every single one of them. And if I need to make it a long answer, I go find one of my own videos. I create a Loom session where it's a voiceover, and I tell people and I show them videos, and that becomes a teaching tool. And then that goes in the Zoom library. So I can go, and I wrote that thing. So my editor, my book editor, is a science fact checker for veterinarians, for behaviorists, for those kinds of people. So everything in the PDFs stands the scrutiny of people like that. So anything that I write, it has to be true, or I'm not going to say it. So the slides are simplified, the PDFs are not, and all of it is factual. So it's not going to leave anybody out. And people that want more are going to be able to ask more. And those are the people that I really like to work with. If you want to talk about looking at behavior endlessly, boy, I'm your guy. That's really, really fun for me. And the course is set up so that I don't have to take people's time that way if that's not what they want, but they have the opportunity to take that farther with me if they want. So the Zoom sessions, if somebody graduates, they get it for a year. If people want to continue to do that, I think I have it set up for a membership at like $100 annually, which comes out to like $4 a session if I'm doing, more sessions. That's a really big value. That allows people to stay involved with a learning community of people that are working together and learning. And I mean, that's a big deal. I'm really excited about that. So it's written for anybody. It's written at a starting point. I don't want to be over anybody's head. And it can go as far as it needs to go because of the flexibility of how it's set up.
That's
Does
really,
that work?
yeah, absolutely. That's really smart. I'm a writer. I think you and I have the same affliction, maybe, that we want to write everything out, take stuff from our brains and write it out in paragraph form. And there's only a small percentage of the population that really wants to digest information that way. So you have this like multi-layered, you've got video, you've got summary slides, you've got deep PDFs. So there should be something there for everybody, no matter what type of learner they are and how deep they want to go. So very smart, but a big investment on your part to do that in so many
It's a
ways.
huge time investment. I thought writing that course was my time investment. Oh, no. It's going to be continuing to nurture it and stay involved with students. But that's, other than actually working with a dog in front of me, that's one of my favorite things to do. So what I did was increase the quality of my life by being in service to other people. And that course seems to be the best medium for the way I like to teach, which is to be very involved and dynamic with it.
It's very exciting. I've got a couple more questions for you, but I don't want anybody to tune out of this podcast thinking we're about to end without hearing how they can get to your courses. So, what is the website address that they should seek out?
The easiest one in the world I created for you, and it's lgdfreecourse.com. And I
LG.
did lgdfreecourse.com.
Okay.
And I did that because you don't have to remember too much. That if you type that in somewhere, you'll go to the free course that you signed up with this morning. But that free course lives on the homepage for all the rest of it. So
Right.
it will put you where the paid course is. And the free course, if people even only know what an LGD is and why an LGD border collie is not the best of both, right?
Yeah.
And it helps protect dogs and people. So that's why that piece is free. It's actually the first component in the paid course. And I did it so that people know what they're getting into. If my teaching style doesn't work, they don't need to go any further. But that course, that address will put you in touch with all the rest of it. Subscribing to my YouTube channel is smart because I'm putting a lot of these Zoom videos on there on YouTube so you don't have to pay to see them. My website, when I do blog posts and there's videos on there and some of this will end up there. If you subscribe to it, you get told that that stuff's there and it's free, ongoing. And honestly, I felt that if I created this course and I had one student a month, it would pay for the hosting and it was worth doing. If I thought that I could give it away and people would take it seriously, I would, but they won't. People don't do that. And if you price it too high, people can't afford it. And if you price it too low, people think it's a lesser product than something that's priced higher. Marketing is just insane. So I've tried to find a middle point where I can do my best. I don't know if you saw this, but course is priced at $200. I haven't done that yet. It's still at an introductory rate, but there are rebates for people that adopt dogs, people that work at shelters, people that run rescues, people that, I mean, anybody that can help these dogs that's interested, I'm interested in working back for. So right now, if you signed up at $150 and you were any of those people, the course costs you $100 for video sessions for a year. So it's as close to free as I can get and have it still meet the truths of marketing.
That's very cool. As we sign off here, can you tell us where you're headed with this? I know that you're constantly tweaking things and adding content with the Zoom sessions and that sort of thing, but do you see the need for future whole other modules to it or whole other additions?
Tons. I won't live long enough. What I do with training clients is I have to start at the beginning and build a base, and then we go where we actually meant to go. The course allows people to get all that in a very well-organized fashion. If they take that course, then I can do mini courses that are really specialized. Like I want to really talk about how dogs learn. I want to talk about, and those are going to be geeky. Those are not necessarily going to be entry-level things. I'd also like to create more that are just simple. Like I'm tempted to do one, and I've got it kind of partially constructed about the common myths that are associated with LGDs and the kernel of truth and the huge amount of stuff that gets in the way of, if you believe the myth, you're headed down a path and this is why. So those kind of mini modules are coming. And there's spin-offs that are more possible, at least in going deeper in an education because of the baseline that the bigger course, creates. But I won't live long enough to run down all the rabbit trails about dogs and training and cool things. And I like the fact that if people are interested, they're looking at it. And if they're bored, they can go somewhere else. Like my husband, he does not want to talk about this stuff. He wants me to talk to someone else about this stuff. So, I can run amok on my online forum and not feel badly about wasting people's time because if they're not interested, they can go somewhere else.
And if there's somebody out there listening right now who says, "Well, that's nice, Cindy, that you have that online course, but my particular breed is a Euro-Asian Pyrenean mountain something or other dog that you've never heard of, so therefore, yeah, this course would not apply to my breed of dog." What would you say to that?
After I got over laughing hysterically while not letting someone know that I'm laughing, I would point out a couple of things. One is that because of what I've learned, I could walk in a zoo and I could train a tiger, an elephant, whatever. I could teach a fish in a fish tank using a pen light. The laws of behavioral science are consistent. What is different is what motivates the dog and their emotional set point. And that's a bad way to put it. So Ray Coppinger goes into this a lot. He talks about dopamine receptors and opiate receptors. And border collies have a lot of dopamine receptors. They learn fast. Everything is fast. Their bodies are fast. So the way that you work with them has to keep up with that. They also can become frustrated more fa faster. They're sensitive dogs. They get hurt easily when people yell at them and do horrible things to them. The differing livestock guardian dog breeds, that's true of. Maremmas and Great Pyrenees are easy dogs to work with because they have a great affinity for people and a great tolerance of change. I've had dogs come here to the ranch in training that are not those breeds, Asian breeds, Sharplana, whatever. So I don't know how to say it. I have a had a Karakachin here yesterday. I've had a Tibetan Mastiff here. Those dogs have a higher set point, is how I think of it. They have more dopamine receptors. They're really on the muscle. They are not as flexible about things. And for instance, I'll give you an example. With the Maremma that's working a fence line and barking at somebody else, if I step in front of that dog, I get his eye contact and I reinforce it and I walk away, they'll come with me. I did that with the first Sharplaninak that came. I stepped in front of her. She was barking. She was frenzied. She was barking at an animal that was messing with her across the fence. I stepped in front of her. I redirected her. She reached up and took hold of my arm and looked in my eyes and said, "Do you hear me?" And Maremma would never do that. And it's because it created instant frustration. And so I was really in her way. So I learned that I could make a noise and redirect her to me without stopping her and encourage her to choose to come to me. But I couldn't physically stand in front of her and be God. I had to offer her kind of a middle step. So there's things that I can get away with a soft kind of a dog like a Maremma that I really have to think of differently with a dog like that. And those dogs teach me so much. And I work with those dogs now with Zoom clients, but I've also had those dogs here. And they're kind of a big step a different direction. You know, I think of it as training a tiger. There's liberties that you just don't take, right? And so I've learned more about how to not frustrate those dogs, how to more softly line up with what they need. And so the breed differences need that. They need me to make adaptions about what my training choices are going to be. But I don't have to know about the breed to observe the dog's body language and make adjustments and see if that helps us or hurts us. So, you know, I don't have to have ever. I got to train a Binturong in New York last year. I've never met one, but I know about body language and I know about reinforcers, and I had the best time with that little creature. You know?
You got to train a what now?
Binturong. A Binturong comes from some crazy part of the world, and I've seen him on National Geographic, but I'd never seen one. And it was a special kind of behind the scenes situation, and I wanted to see a Binturong. And I was the only one that showed up because everybody else wanted to learn about tigers. So I got to pull out all my marker training, and that little guy, I had him going high, I had him going low, I had him going down, I had him down on his shoulder, all these things, because I know about reinforcers and I know about marking behavior. So all I have to do. And there's a blog post, I should send it to you. One of the courses I took that's been the most valuable to me was training parrots, a specific parrot. I don't know what body language of a parrot does. I don't know what they're saying. And it was in a huge aviary and the guy could leave at any time. So if I wasn't reinforcing to stay with, he was gone. So I had to throw out most dogs do this, or most parrots do this, or if he likes me, he'll do this. None of it served me. It was, I have a parrot, I have a peanut. He comes closer, that's a good deal. I have a peanut and I move this way and he leaves, that's a bad deal. So I don't have to know a lot about, and it's almost helpful not to. It's almost helpful to just be right there in the moment with the animal that's right in front of you, make a change, observe whether it was good or bad, if you want to put it that way, and make another change. It's really, really fun training to do it that way.
That's fascinating, Cindy. I really appreciate it. That was an hour that flew by like that. Thank you so much for being here today. Let's say the name of that. Well, first of all, it's Benson Maremma's if you want to find the farm website, and that will link you to all of your courses. But let's give a that specific address to get to the course again.
LGD free course is the easiest.
LGDfreecourse.com.
That's the easiest one. Livestock Guardian Dog online courses is the whole big thing. And if I get good at marketing, you'll be able to type just about anything in Google and it'll send you there, right?
That's right.
I aspire to be a marketer, working on that.
Okay, well, one way or another, Farm Dog audience, find Cindy's courses. Cindy, thanks again for being here. I really appreciate it.
I want to tell you one more thing.
Please
Two of the
do.
paid students right now came to me because they heard our podcast.
Beautiful. That's exciting.
Yep.
Okay,
That's pretty
well,
cool.
hopefully we just sent you a bunch more, and
Okay.
we'll talk to you again soon, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Cindy. Take care. Thanks for listening to Farm Dog. If you enjoyed this episode or any of the other episodes, please subscribe, leave us a positive review, and tell someone about it. Thanks.